Hello and welcome to The Way It Is on Claremorris Community Radio 94.6 FM. My name is Anthony McNicholas and I'll be with you for the next hour covering CVs, applications for jobs using CVs. I'm delighted to welcome my guest Liam Horn from Slievenua Careers. To start the show, we have Jimmy Buckley with My Mother.
Every day just to tell her that I love her. That's a thing I'm very proud to say. 'Cause I'm so glad to have her. To me, she's like no other. She's the reason I'm the man you see today. How her heart was filled with joy when she saw her little boy. The first time that she held me in her arms. And from that moment on, she and Dad were both the ones who cared for me and kept me from all harm. So when you see your mother, tell her that you love her. Hold her like you never wish to part. When this world it seems unfair, she's the one who's always there. My mother means the kindest, loving heart. Since I've grown from boy to man, I've come to understand the love that lives within a mother's heart. That's why I call her every day, if I'm near or far away, for I know someday she and I must part. So always hold her dear, as you count each passing year. Say you're sorry if you caused her pain or strife. And when it's your birthday, just call her up and say, thank you, Mom, for giving me gift of life. So when you see your mother, tell her that you love her. Hold her like you never wish to part. When this world it seems unfair, she's the one who's always there. My mother means the kindest, loving heart. When this world it seems unfair, she's the one who's always there. My mother means the kindest, loving heart.
Banachdi an lei.
Kiul.
Kanch.
Shkelta.
Nocht.
Aatjul.
Bigi egeistacht.
For the seeds you sow, for the crops you grow, by land you can't let go, for the animals you know, for that new machine you need so, or just to help with cash flow. our agri-loan can help you farmers know. That one big decision just got easier. Claire Morris Credit Union, with you every step of the way. Drop in or call us on 094 937 1159 or click claremorriscu.ie. St. Coleman's Claire Morris Credit Union Limited is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Terms and conditions apply.
O'Connor's Garage, Bow. Specialising in car sales, servicing and maintenance of all makes of cars and light commercials, body repairs and dent magic. Get your vehicle ready for NCT or DOE. O'Connor's Garage, Castlebar Road, Bow. Call Michael on 094 93 65265.
Why pay more?
McGann's Plaster Mouldings, may spit at Claremorris. If you're looking for the best deals in cornices or centrepieces, then we are the people to see. Clients can choose from 55 centrepieces and 25 cornices, as well as beading, dado rails, corbels, niches and archways. And all are made at our workshop in Maysmith at Claremorris. McGann's also cater for contract for public buildings and private homes. Why not call and see our full range of products or telephone Darren or Tom at 094 9388208 or 087 2503184. Also on our website at www.mcgann's.com. And remember, McGann is your man.
Indulge in the magic of Indian cuisine at Dawat Indian Restaurant, the Square of Claremorris. Try our early bird menu or treat yourself to a tasty takeaway with home delivery service. Taste the magic with every bite. Open Monday to Sunday, 5 to 11pm. Telephone 094 937 2222. Dawat Indian Restaurant.
Looking for a taxi? Whether it's an airport pickup, a shopping trip, or a lift home after a night out, we are the first choice for all your travel needs in Claremorris. Call Martin Goggins on 087 2666 996 for fast, reliable service. That's 087 2666 996 for a taxi. Martin Goggins, giving a lift to the people of Claremorris.
Join the Goggin Taxi page on Facebook.com.
Hello and welcome to The Way It Is on Claremorris Community Radio 946 FM. And my guest tonight is Liam Horn. And you're very welcome, Liam.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Pleasure to be here.
Just maybe you could tell the listeners that wouldn't know you, and there's very few of those, a little bit about yourself and how you've got to here and away we go.
Okay, it's a bit like a job interview that I spend my days coaching people to do. I'm a native of Ballinrobe, born and bred, with a brief hiatus in Partrie, my father's home place, for a few years. I did the Leaving Cert in Ballinrobe CBS, now amalgamated with the community school, in 1985. My ambition growing up always was to be a sports journalist, and at that point I went to the College of Commerce in Rathmines and completed, or sorry, did 1 year of the journalism course there. At the end of the first year, I'm going into boastful mode now.
Yes.
I got a job in the Western People from Terry Riley as a South Mayo correspondent. And in the same week, I was offered a job by the Connacht Telegraph as a reporter as well. Two gentlemen arrived at the house, two men sadly missed now. PJ Henley from Manulla, of course, was a legendary figure in the Connacht Telegraph, as was the man with them, Tom Correll, who was the editor. And PJ was effectively the manager or director general of the place as well. So I spent 9 happy years in the Western People, and 3 of which I was part-time head of sport in Midwest Radio. Then I got a job in 1995 as Gaelic Games correspondent to the Irish Independent. Spent 5 years there and left that then. That was 2000. And since then I have been editor of a startup newspaper in Athlone, the Athlone Voice, sports editor of the Evening Echo in Cork for about a year and a bit. And but primarily self-employed, actually, for about the last 15 or so years. And for the last 8 years, I've been running Slea Nuach Careers, which is a career coaching and training company. We help people write CVs. We write CVs for people. We write application forms for people. We do interview training, mock interviews, anything to do with trying to get a job, either within your company, going for a job elsewhere, or if you're a school leaver or a college leaver trying to get your first job. So anything, more or less anything in the career spectrum we cover. And we have offices in various places around the country, Bandon, County Cork, a kind of a disparate enough collection. It's like a bad bus Éireann timetable. Bandon, Limerick, Athlone, Tullamore, Ballinrobe, Claremorris, Mary O'Brien Killeen here in Claremorris, right. And Galway. I think I've got them all then.
Right.
And Sligo, Fintan Dunn and Sligo as well.
Well, I was told that you have great enthusiasm and positivity, so you'd want it with all of that.
Yeah, when you're not very talented, you can't allow yourself the luxury of not being enthusiastic, at least. So when you're on Chéanna Hoil Lodge or Beagan Dó Mhic, no, I suppose, yeah, no, I would probably, you know, I don't attach labels to myself generally, and I'm pretty good at not talking about myself in some ways, right, in terms of talking about things I'm involved in, etc. Yeah. But yeah, I would consider myself fairly positive about life and fairly kind of have a go. And that can cause me problems as well. I'm not always the best man to say no sometimes, and maybe I need a bit of that. But life is for living. We won't be here forever, and we'll try and make the most of it as best we can, you know.
Would say your experience in the Irish Independent would have brought you to different parts of the world, or did it?
It did. I would have been in Australia covering the International Rules Tour, in America a few times. There was a game played in America, Cavan Kerry in 97, the 50th anniversary of the Polo Grounds All-Ireland between Cavan and Kerry. And it was actually a National League game in 97. It came a few weeks after Maurice Fitzgerald and friends had beaten Mayo in the All-Ireland final.
Oh, don't remind me.
Yeah, and would have been in London. Joe McDonough, God be good to him, the GA president, was elected in London, actually. And London, New York, Australia, and covered the Hurling Shinty International in Inverness, in Butte Park, Inverness as well. And probably some other places as well that I can't remember now.
You know, getting back to our CVs and the many, many people that are trying to get jobs out there today, and thankfully it has improved with the workforce increasing all the time. But what is a CV?
Well, in its strictest terms, it's a story of your life. So clearly it has to be abridged, or it'll go on forever. In reality, I would say a CV is a sales document. And that's a fairly modern take on it, perhaps, in that once upon a time, CVs were staid, were very terse, were very sticking to the facts, etc., as they were. Whereas now, in a competitive market, in a communications-driven world like we live in now, a CV must sell you. It can't just do that. It's got to do a lot more. You know, there's so much competition for attention nowadays. You know, everybody is a publisher nowadays. Where I started in the Western People in 1986, and at that stage, I was typing my stories to the Western People on an old Remington typewriter and putting it on the train to Ballina every morning when somebody else retyped it.
Yeah.
You know, that's only 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, we're not talking about for those stuff. It's not quite 30 years ago, is it?
Well, it's not.
It is, actually. Oh, my God. Yeah. It is for though. Yeah. It's actually more than that. It's 32 years ago. Whereas nowadays, everybody's got their own Facebook page, their own LinkedIn page, Twitter page, online CVs. LinkedIn is a huge thing in the career development area. So you've got to do more now to be noticed. And so a CV is primarily a sales document.
Yeah.
And you know, so you look at how do products get sold? I see a very fetching cover or poster here for Anthony Broderick's book, The Adventures of Jack and Adam. I mean, that's a beautiful piece of artistry.
Yes.
And I'm familiar with Anthony's work. It makes you want to read more.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to, that's what a CV needs to do as well.
Right.
It makes the reader, i.e. the recruiter or the employer, read more and want to meet you, basically. The CV probably should be dead by now. I would have said 10 years ago, LinkedIn would have taken out the CV by now. But it's a remarkably resilient species, the CV, and still most jobs require a CV. Now, LinkedIn is getting there, and you can now apply for lots of jobs using your LinkedIn profile. But the CV is remarkably resilient.
And what should be in a CV? When we sit down to do a CV, you know, you say about sales. Are we good at selling ourselves when it comes to writing down about ourselves?
No, thank God.
Yeah.
That keeps me in a business. No, generally people are understated. They're bashful. They're modest. And also they forget things. We forget things about our careers. That's not just if you're many years on the go. You might forget a college project from 2 years ago that might be relevant. So my guiding principle when writing a CV is to take the, first of all, we need to get away from the whole concept of one CV fitting all employers, okay?
Yeah.
So your CV, while it might be read by 50 different people over the course of a year, 50 different employers, at any given time, it's only been read by one employer. So if you're going to buy a suit in Eddie Murphy's, he doesn't sell the same suit to 50 different people based on age, preference, body type, etc.
Everybody's an individual.
Everybody's an individual. And every recruiter has individual needs. So you've got to see, and basically if you take Eddie Murphy, who probably is one of the best salespeople we know around here, you go into Eddie Murphy's to buy a suit. The first thing he says is, what's it for? You know, is it for a wedding? Is it for an interview? Or is it for work? Or what exactly is it for? Okay. Mm. And then he figures out clearly your body shape, your size, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He probably has some knowledge of colour, your eye colour, all that kind of thing. So he's figuring you out as soon as he sees you.
He's actually doing a CV.
Yes.
In front of you.
He's finding out what you're trying to buy, and then he's trying to give you that. And that's what a CV should try to do as well. It should first of all figure out what is the employer trying to buy. And employers publish what they're trying to buy in their job spec, in the advertisement, on their website, in press releases they issue, and employees who work there will tell you as well. So your biggest job before you write a CV is to figure out where it's going.
Yeah.
Where exactly is it going? And unfortunately, for a lot of people, they create a CV and they send it out in a general broadcast, hoping, like Eddie Murphy wouldn't do, that every single person coming in the door wants the exact same suit.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, this would almost be unthinkable before the technological revolution.
Right.
But nowadays, you can have 10 copies of your CV, one for sales, retail sales, one for insurance sales, if that's an area you're interested in. You know, lots of people have different backgrounds and different careers going on. So your CV should match the job spec, and particularly early on, should almost be a mirror of the job spec, so that when the employer reads it, their head is nodding, saying, "All right, yeah, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in that. I'm interested in that." So you got to match much more closely than people tend to do. People tend to create a CV and fire it out there.
Yeah.
You know, so let's say Clamara's Community Radio are looking for somebody to do certain things. So, and they publish 10 things in their job spec. Well, that's the 10 things you should be trying to meet.
Yeah.
If you can't meet 6 or 7 of those things, you're going for the wrong job. And that's a dispiriting exercise as well.
Yeah.
So meet the job spec, I would say, or meet the requirements of the employer is the big thing.
Because the application form or the advertisement that's in the paper is very, it's very well put, and there's a lot of meat in it.
Yeah.
And people then maybe they're applying, trying to answer questions into positions or into companies that actually they're not suitable at all for.
Yes, yes. And that's, as I said, that's dispiriting. It's dispiriting as you're doing it. You're realizing, I'm not hitting the spots here. Secondly, if you get called to interview and you go in and you're sitting there saying, "Oh God, this isn't the right match either," and when you're looking for work, particularly if you're unemployed, your morale is a fragile flower, and to allow it to be beaten by things you shouldn't go for in the first place. You know, I meet people who say, "Oh, I sent out 25 CVs.
Right.
You know, and I'd be saying, "Okay, where did you send them? Were all 25 likely to go somewhere proper for you?"
Yeah.
So send out 5 that might work for you rather than 25 in a general broadcast.
Yeah.
And that point about your morale being a fragile flower, things have improved, but not dramatically so.
Yeah.
So there's still lots of people out there either who are unemployed or not at the level they once were or would like to be. And I think we're going through a phase now where, and I see this in our business all the time, is that people who kept the head down for 5 or 6 or 7 years are now beginning to poke up the head and say, "Right, can I get somewhere else now? Can I move along the line?" So, and when your career stuff is like teenage romance, it's dangerous stuff to get wrong. It can mess you up.
It can.
And not just teenage romance, indeed.
Yeah.
But you need to be careful how you manage it and careful what you go for, so you don't end up sort of just getting demoralized, you know. Your morale is so important when you're job searching. You got to persist, but not blindly so. You need to know what you're looking for.
What should we not put into a CV? Is there such a thing as not putting it in, or should we put everything in?
No, you must be very selective. I use the phrase, you must curate your own career for the benefit of the employer. So you look at your career and you pick from there the things that the employer needs to know. Yes. So, for example, if Clamores Community Radio wanted somebody who could speak German for some reason, well, if I studied German or I spent 2 years becoming fluent in German in Germany, I bring that in. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, if Clamores Community Radio are not looking for that, I probably don't bring that in. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you take the guiding principle of what is the employer looking for, that will answer a lot of questions you have about your career. So one thing people do is they take, we'll say, they work for 5 years in a place and they believe their CV should capture everything they did in that 5 years.
Yes.
So there's 16 bullet points under the career. That to me is not thinking. That's Eddie Murphy bringing out the suits you don't want. Okay.
Yeah.
Just bring out the suits that this employer is looking for.
Yeah.
So what are the 5 or 6 key things you did in that job that might make might get the head nodding of the employer? And people sometimes think that they need to put all these this exhaustive detail in on the basis that it shows they're a hard worker. The problem is you put too much stuff in, the employer will lose interest.
Yeah.
There are lots of studies that show attention spans are dwindling dramatically. There's a study for everything, obviously, and studies show that. There's a study that employers spend as little as 7 seconds sometimes on a page in a CV. So if you're making the employer read deeply into your CV to find the nugget that you should be serving up to them early on. So get the good stuff for that employer into your CV early on. Don't hide it away in the bottom of page 3. So the answer to the question, what should you not put in? You should not put in stuff that is not particularly relevant to the employer.
Mm.
That said, you should not leave big gaps in your CV.
Mm.
You should just put in one line saying, I worked there for 6 years, something like that. But if it's not a relevant job, you don't elaborate much. But a gap can cause questions. So if there's a 6-year missing point in your CV and it's not addressed, I always say to people, presume they'll take the worst possible connotation or spin from that. So try to cover off all the blanks, but keep thinking relevance. What did I do that's relevant to this job I'm going for?
When the company receives the CV, is that company really looking for a good CV, or are they just advertising for people to come in and we'll say 20 people will basically apply and send in CVs? Like, are CVs that powerful within companies?
Yeah, I mean,
are there other angles?
You got to kind of play by the rules that the employers have laid down. So if they've advertised for send your CV to this address,
yeah,
it's kind of the game you're playing. It's still the pre-selection method of choice for most employers.
Okay.
As I said, I think before too long, I think we're going to go from a point where, you know, right now I create my CV and I give it to you, okay? At some point in the future, and this is not very far away, I won't need a CV at all, because you'll be able to find everything about me online anyway.
Okay.
And there are companies working on that technology. So LinkedIn is kind of a bit like that, but at some point your CV won't even matter because it's all there. And there's some very intelligent technology. I talked to a company in the UK a few years ago. I'm not sure where they are with it now, but they were talking about this technology that could bring up in the flash of a few buttons everything about me, for example. So if I say I'm interested in children's literature, they'll see that I've never once blogged about it, never once tweeted about it, never once written on Facebook about it. And, you know, so they'll say, well, you're bluffing. Do you know what I mean? So that's where it's going to get to, whether we like it or not. And that's a whole other question. But that's where it's going to get to. Right. But right now, the employer is selecting by method of CV, by this is the CV. Now, they may well ring somebody on your CV straight off and say, what, this person looks good, what do you think? And they might say, don't touch with a 40-foot pole. You don't rightly know. But they are important. And I suppose I put it to you this way, a bad CV will do you down. A good one mightn't make you up, but a bad one will do you down, because it'll undersell you. The stuff won't be there. The evidence won't be there.
So I suppose I am successful in getting into Sleep Nua Careers. Going in for the interview, what do I have to do before I go in myself?
Yes. Okay. Well, the whole thing is a continuation of the CV approach, which is basically meet the employer's needs. Okay. So now you're at the next stage and they've sent you an invitation to interview. They may well have given you more information now as well. They may tell you who's interviewing you. They may tell you the type of interview they're running. And that's a whole other world that's evolving as well. But you now know you're going in for that interview. Okay. And the phrase I use here is a surgical strike. So you should walk in that door ready to talk knowledgeably about your experience and how that experience is going to work here today. in this company in the future. Okay, right. So your research at this point is absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
When I was going for jobs, I took 2 days off work to prepare for an interview.
Right,
and that's where my interest in this area developed.
Yeah,
I went for a job once, and I knew all other six candidates in the first seven that were going. When it got to the final thing, I knew the other two candidates who were going,
yeah.
And I was subtly targeting things about them in the interview,
right.
Not deliberately,
right.
But bigging up things about myself maybe to highlight a deficiency I felt some of those candidates had. Now that was in a media world, which is probably a bit more public.
Yeah,
but you need to know so much about the company. Where it's going, what it has done. I was talking at a careers fair in Galway last week, and I told the story of conducting an interview in my own business with somebody, a very, very able candidate, who spent the entire interview talking about working for us as a recruitment company. We're not a recruitment company. We're a training company.
Yeah.
It was a fundamental flaw. She could not overcome that. She could not get the job after that, because even though I thought she was a good candidate, how could I believe anything she said about attention to detail or I'll do the job? Hadn't done the basics, okay? Now, that's clearly beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But the good candidate is so knowledgeable about your business. They know what you're thinking almost. So how do you do that? You do this by reading the job spec until your eyes hurt, looking at the advertisement, talking to people working there. I said to candidates, okay, what are the five most important things in the job spec? And then they say, what are the five most important things not on the job spec? And they say, what do you mean? Well, do you know what's going on in that company? What's actually going on there?
Yeah.
What's not in the job spec? And that's what you need to know. So you got to talk to people working there. And some companies are very difficult to penetrate. But you need to be the one who gets further than everybody else in terms of your research.
Yeah.
And that's probably the two biggest errors people make, in my experience, is they undersell themselves. They don't talk themselves up enough. And they don't research the company well enough. So they go in and don't. An interview should be a knowledgeable chat, like we are having here now. It's not a firing squad. You're not going in. You should be prepared to ask questions in an interview.
And if you're confident enough in your own ability and that you have put down the information on your CV and you're able to speak the CV, as you say yourself, then you should be a good candidate or a good potential candidate for the company.
Correct. Because when you ask me about body language, okay?
Yes.
It's not an area I'm expert in, okay?
No.
But I would say body language is a function of your confidence.
It's definitely.
Where does your confidence come from? It comes from preparation. It comes from knowing your stuff. And we rarely talk about confidence in what we do. We focus on doing the things that will naturally build your confidence, okay? So let's just take the case of a free taker in Gaelic football.
Yes.
So he's all his life, Maurice Sheridan, all his life going down to the pitch in Ball taking a freeze. Next thing, almost magically, he's going to Croke Park to take a freeze.
Correct.
Okay? Nerve-wracking and all that. And he's got to play the game as well. And then when the music stops every now and then, all eyes on Maurice Sheridan, he puts the ball down and he has to get himself to kick that ball over the bar. Okay? Why does Maurice Sheridan not freeze in that moment? Because he knows he's done the work.
Yeah.
All his life has been spent preparing for this moment. Mm. Secondly, he has told himself, I'm sure, and I don't know what Morris's philosophy was, but this is a pitch with a goalpost down there, 50 yards from where I am now. Hmm. 50 yards in Dublin, in Croke Park, is the same as 50 yards in Ball. So he falls back in his preparation.
Yeah.
Not on some, in my view, it's kind of going into a different area. There's a lot of power of positive thinking stuff out there right now, which is rooted in rhyming couplets or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But to me, it must be rooted in experience. It must be rooted in, you know, you can do anything you want. Well, I can't ever be a ballerina, so don't tell me I can do anything I want. But I might be able to run 10K if I work hard enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the same is true of an interview. If you do your research, you can do a good interview. That's that. I would put all the focus on that. Preparation, preparation, preparation. Not on other stuff around that. Body language, I mean, The thing I find myself most talking about in terms of body language is do not suppress your natural hand movements.
Right.
In school, we were told to sit on our sit on our hands and sit in various places, etc. But actually, if you're naturally a hand mover, why would you suppress that? Because now you're suppressing at a time you need to flow, not to, do you know what I mean? You don't want to clamp up all of a sudden. That'd be like Maurice Sheridan going to Croke Park and saying, I'm going to take this free differently today.
Yeah.
See, the sports psychologists tell you do everything as closely to what you always did it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you do not change the big day.
So just because you're sitting in front of an interviewer for a very important job, to be yourself.
Yes.
Be relaxed.
Yes. Trust your natural communication style.
And tell them about yourself.
Relative to the job that they have going. People put fierce pressure on themselves in interviews, right? They go into an interview expecting to produce this seamless interview as if they're reading poetry scripted in front of them, okay?
Yeah.
That's not how organic communication works. If somebody listens back to this, and I'm an experienced communicator.
Yes.
I start, I stop, I lose my train of thought. Because that's what you do when you're naturally communicating. You sit in a coffee shop talking to somebody. You don't have a game of automaton kind of conversation. So in an interview, you need to bring that to play as well, that anything you do that suppresses your natural instinct is a bit like starting the marathon, running an 8-minute mile when it's ahead of your pace.
Yeah.
You might get 6 miles in, but you are not going to sustain it. Or if you're a singer, which I'm not, and if my cousins, the Killings, are listening here, they always enjoy when I talk about singing but they're, by their consensus, I'm the worst singer that ever didn't sing. But if you sing at an octave or a level above you're able to sing, you just can't sustain it. So trust your natural communication style. So people go on stage. They instead of relaxing, they feel like what I call my mother's phone voice, kind of, hello. Oh, how are you, Mary? How are things?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in the second part because that's how you talk.
That's right.
And most people talk well. You know, when you go down to your natural communication style, people don't effing blind all the time.
No.
They don't. You know, people, particularly in a professional setting,
right,
chat away and chat very knowledgeably. It's this trying to put it into a higher level or kind of a context or something else that causes people problems, I believe.
Yeah.
And suppressing hand movement, believe it or not, in sessions I do with people, releasing their hands is often the trigger, believe it or not. I look at people and say, why is this person so uptight? What's going on here? What's going on here? And I'm trying to sit back and I try different things. And it's the hand movement generally is the first sign. And sometimes I won't say to them at all because I wouldn't bring attention to what's working well other than to say, you know, just chat away like you're doing now. Don't do this. Just, you know, let it happen. Kind of
I can tell you, Liam, here now, from personal experience, Bridie Sheridan, who looks after me here and makes sure that I do it right at the end of the day, has been continuously telling me to relax.
Okay.
And
so
just,
Bridie's...
You know, go with it.
Yeah.
And just let it flow at the end of the day. And that's the same thing in an interview.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, put a headset on with the microphone and walk around the room.
Yeah.
Do things. Movement. You know, you just think about energy in our body.
Yeah.
We sit tight. You sit tight there for 5 minutes. Your body, your twitches will start. In my case, it's the back of my neck. Other people get their hands going.
Yeah.
Burn off the energy. You're going to have nervous energy. Burn it off. Let it move
away. But without
away.
It, you're no good either.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If Maurice Sheridan didn't have some nerves,
yes,
he wouldn't have the adrenaline for what he needed in the big days. And you got to accept it. Nothing you can do in preparation is going to totally remove nerves. The trick is to understand they're going to be there.
Yeah.
How are you going to handle them?
Yeah.
So you might sound like I'll do a very short first answer just to get going.
Right.
But you understand that they're going to be there. You know, we see actors, and I starred with the best. I mean, I worked with John Corliss as an actor.
Yes.
So,
some actor, isn't he?
Full-time actor.
Yes.
Now, John was a formidable sight 10 minutes before curtains up. But actors, singers, footballers, jockeys, all sorts of people get sick before they go out on the stage.
Yeah.
Physically sick. You know, and that you know, not all of them, but they understand. Because you're putting yourself out there.
It is
a big thing.
You are.
But we have to relish it and have to go for it. I do a lot of training with people on presentation and public speaking and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, college setting, that kind of thing. And that's daunting for people. But it's wonderful to take it on. I had a client recently who was going for a public speaking thing, felt very dubious about it.
Yeah.
Now, I knew within 5 minutes of meeting this client, not a problem.
Yeah.
It just took a couple of sessions to get them to there.
That's right, yeah.
But then they went and did a really, really good job. And it's a massive boost in life to take that, not to take the nervousness out of it, but to understand I can be nervous and still overcome it. You know, the New York Times did a survey, and as I said, there are surveys for everything.
Yes.
That death was a secondary fear to public speaking. You know, there must have been some gink in how they did it. But getting up and speaking about yourself or speaking in public can be very daunting for people. And interviews are part of that. But when you get comfortable with it and knowing that you'll get through it.
But that's hard to get that across, you know, because people are fearful. I want the job. It's a job that suits me. I like the company.
Yeah.
I may have little things that the company mightn't find on me.
And
therefore, they're trying to... But I think another one there, Liam, is the dress. The dress that a person comes to an interview.
Yeah,
presenting themselves.
Of all the expertise I don't have, fashion is right up there at the top. I can tell you. But in my view, it's like if you're a male, you wear a suit and tie. Or blazer and trousers and tie, and you tie your tie up to the top, not the 10 past 2 or wedding job, and it's pulled to one side. Like
it just doesn't hit the button.
It's not even greater than a wedding at 10 past 2, but for women. Professional suits, whatever, you know, you got to be comfortable as well. So don't overly...
No,
and if you're not used to wearing a suit, I would say wear the suit for a few evenings around the house at home. Just get used to it. Don't come in starched up in your suit kind of thing. You know, I'd have people say, well, I'm going for a job as a mechanic. I won't be wearing a suit on the job. But getting the job was a different job to doing the job.
Right.
And nobody ever regretted being dressed well. We often regretted not being dressed well enough. And you know... But all of that is part of, you know, I said to people, walk in tall, confident, strong, you know, shake hands confidently, you know, don't apologize for being there. What's the worst thing that can happen here? They can't take your current job off you.
No.
They can't shoot down your career forever. And the dangerous one is the job you really want. And I've come across clients who've said to me, I went for a job last year, didn't really care about it, I got it. And I said, well, isn't there something in that? You took the pressure. You had no pressure on yourself. So you're better not pressurizing yourself too much. Mm. And a lot of what I do in training with people is just, you know, see it for what it is. Don't make an already difficult task more difficult by putting huge pressure on yourself. And things that give people pressure, if they're working in a company, everyone is saying, oh, you're going to get that. Being favorite is a difficult position. I always say to my clients, think you're second favorite.
Yeah.
Good enough to win it, but a bit to do. Even if you're a favourite, think a little bit like the underdog, but not so far back you haven't a hope. Because, and I, you know, I've seen people, because they're worried about what's going to happen if they don't get it, ending up uptight and focusing on the wrong thing. Focus on what you need to focus on. You can't referee the match. You do not make the decision. All you can do is give your account of it and walk out the door and hope that they come your way.
But I think style, I think the way you dress gives you that touch of confidence.
Absolutely.
Outside of what you think.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, going into a company, people who are interviewing you and you come in well presented, it gives you that bit of a
absolutely.
Lift.
Absolutely, oh, absolutely.
Subconsciously.
I agree. And, you know, particularly lots of males probably hate the whole thing of dressing up for a wedding at times and rushing and racing in the morning. I've never been female, so I don't know if it's true of females, but I know as a male, it's true of me. But actually, when you do go to the effort, you do feel better for doing it. You know, so, and I think that gives a lift as well.
Yeah.
And certainly if we have any parents of younger people listening who might be inclined to cut a corner, you know, you do come in time to realise the value of dressing well. You know, you might not always realise it. Like, we're living through a generation now of tracksuits, for example. That'll come and go, but it's tracksuits right now. Personally, I kind of lament the fact when I walk down Grafton Street now, I don't see anybody with big, spiky pink hair like we used to see in the 80s. There's a little bit of a... I don't think it's a very stylish time.
There's a massive change, Liam. I mean, you take the young people going to the Debs. Like, I mean, they have lovely suits. They're well-dressed.
Yeah.
The lads now, no disrespect to the girls. The girls have beautiful outfits.
Yeah.
The lads now are matching that. So there is that coming through now.
Yes, but day to day, though, I see a lot of tracksuits going on, which is just a personal thing. But they do. When they go for it, they go for it.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's a different point. I used to love, and I love to see people with spiky pink hair and things like that. When you're 20, that's what it's about.
I'm afraid you and I won't have the
spiky. We're out of that game now,
Going back to now we're in at the interview. We've done a successful interview and we're hoping for the best.
Yes.
And then we get a disappointment or we're elated.
Mm-hmm.
On the disappointment side, maybe we'll go on the elated side first because we're positive. You know, what should one do after they're given the job and they're successful with the job? How should they handle the next week following that?
Okay. Can I just go back one step? When you do the interview, I think it's very important to come out of the interview, go for your quiet cup of coffee and evaluate the interview as you saw it.
Okay.
Write down the 10 or 12 things you wanted to get across the table and give yourself a mark out of 10 on how well you did that, okay? Because it's important to learn from the interview independent of the outcome of the interview. By which I mean you could do a really good interview and not get the job because it's just a better candidate or because the boss's niece is going for it. You don't know why you don't get the job sometimes.
Yeah.
But or you could do a really poor interview and you could get the job because your experience got it for you or there was nobody else for the job. So
you can't
take the outcome of the interview as the only appraisal of the interview. So I would say to people, appraise your own interview performance afterwards. Write down the things you'd hope to get across and mark yourself out of that. So if you get the job, I mean, the practical steps are you need to see a contract. If you haven't, if you're currently in a job, I wouldn't tell my employers that I've got the new job until I see a contract.
Okay.
There's many a slip twixt cup and lip in terms of contracts and stuff. So get the contract. Depending on the job, arrange to meet the employers again fairly soon, I would say, just to meet for a cup of coffee and say, okay, what do we need to do next? If contracts can be slow to come out, actually, and that can cause people angst, then the contract comes out and maybe it's a few grand short of what you thought or it didn't give you that day at home you were hoping for. And that can be a real GMO for people because the thing is going great. Now we've got a contract problem. And in contract negotiations, it's something I've some experience of and some contacts of people who are very good at it, but I'm not particularly an expert in it. But all contract negotiations should start out on the basis of not like straight in, oh, the contract is wrong, but I got the contract, everything looks pretty good, they're looking forward to getting started. Just one thing I want to clarify, can you check out that day a week I wanted to work from home that we agreed on? And you go through that in a spirit of this is all going to be fine kind of thing. If you have to up it from there later on, if it's not going your way, you can up it from there. But if you go in all guns blazing, there's only one way from there and that's back down. So
save your
shots. If
that's also something we're not used to, is this thing of asking for more or asking for what was stated in the... Because we're so elated now for getting the job.
But you can make mistakes in that time. You can condemn yourself to a job you didn't want or to work practices you didn't want. And, you know, don't forget, this is... It's a phrase I heard one time, but it's a meeting of equals. They're looking for somebody. You are the person they want. Now we're on an even keel here.
Yes.
And companies who wouldn't pay €35,000 before the interview will sometimes pay 40 after the interview.
If the
right person is there. But contract negotiations, I've had a very good mentor in that area. My brother, actually, who's a senior executive at Glanbia. You pursue them in a very professional, everything is going fine way. You don't cause trouble just because one thing isn't right. Okay, and that's really important because now you're forming a relationship with the employers.
Yes.
And you don't want to upset the whole thing.
Damage it.
Yeah.
Yes.
There may come a time where you have to collapse the scrum and say, look, I'm not going to go ahead with this. And that sometimes happens. But don't, because there can be things lost in translation between the interview panel and the contract writer. Or somebody may have just copied and pasted a big part of a contract, you know, and I've seen contracts being amended, you know, where...
Yes.
So you get the job. It's to meet your employers generally fairly quickly, ascertain exactly... Employers will tell you more at that point as well. They'll say, look, we didn't say in the interview, but we've a real problem here.
Yeah.
So you can learn a bit more.
And we feel that you're...
You're the
you
one
have
for
the
it,
potential
yeah.
to sell.
Yes, or now, we're looking at expanding into a new market and we've seen your experience, that might be something.
Now, we go the opposite now to the person who has gone in, done a great interview and finds out they didn't get the job and are deflated and disappointed, which is natural at the end of the day. How should one handle that?
Burn the place down.
Yeah.
That can be very frustrating.
It can.
I'm not so naive as to suggest that not every job goes to the right candidate. And you can know you're a better candidate than the person that got it, in which case it can be very frustrating. A lot depends on where you're coming from. If you're already in the company and this is a major blow to your progression plans, so to speak, you may have to make a decision. And I have another colleague of mine who does a lot of work with people at high level in the multinationals because he's a lot of experience there. And a question he asks them is, as they're preparing for the interview, if you don't get this job, what's your response? Okay.
Yeah.
Because it may be the end of your road there. And also, in some ways, you can use that subtly as well, because there is a calculation sometimes by employers is that if we give this job to this person, are we creating a problem in their current position? Or so you may have to address that in an interview by saying, you know, I have trained in somebody to replace me. So again, a bit like a football match, if the fullback is doing a good job, the full forward, maybe moving him onto the wing forward is causing that trouble might be the way to go at all.
So you
got to think all that through. And if you feel that's an issue that they may be worried about, you got to give them some reassurance in the interview that I have somebody trained up or somebody, you know, is ready to step into my shoes. If you don't get the job, I mean, as a general rule, I would tend to try to write back and thank people for the opportunity. As a general rule. But that sometimes will appear very hollow. And sometimes your pride will say, you know what, I should have got that job. Yeah. Or certainly the person that got it shouldn't have got it. And okay. I wouldn't necessarily, I would feel a little bit hypocritical then maybe if I sent in a thank you there.
I have a sort of a feeling myself now, whether it's right, whether it's a correct analysis to make, is that I would suggest that you do write back to the company and you thank them for the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe after a period of time when you have sort of seen the light of day, as the man says, and explain then to them that you have basically improved yourself in the meantime by doing this course or that course, because you may have found that you did need an extra course for the job and you were maybe slack there.
Yes.
And say that maybe if in the future you would be looking for somebody again, that I am progressing all the time and I am developing more and studying more and the whole lot, that employer could come back and find that the employee that they took on hasn't been as successful as they wanted.
Yes.
So there is that chance.
Absolutely. And 99 times out of 100, I would say that's the way to go. I suppose I was just flagging up the one case where you know the fix has been in or something like that.
Yeah.
But yes.
Hard to do it now.
Well, it depends. If you feel like it was a fair race and all that kind of thing, and even, you know, or... You know, if you feel their judgment was wrong, but you can still justify why they did it in some way, you know, why they went for A instead of you.
Yeah.
But I would agree wholeheartedly with the spirit of what you're saying, which is that building relationships is what job hunting is all about.
Yeah.
Never more so than in the West of Ireland. It's a very fraternal part of the world.
Yes.
And, you know, you've just built some sort of relationship with these people, and I would build on that rather than just letting it all go to pot afterwards. So I think that they're, and people don't work out, and people have had to go back 6 months later to the previous candidate and say, look, we should have given it to you,
correct.
We didn't. And
correct.
Oh, we've all got to be mature, you know.
Yeah.
And going around
not
nursing,
that easy, though.
No, but nursing a long-term grievance is not good for yourself anyway, in my view. And, you know, I have seen, and we've all seen in lots of arenas, the most intractable of enemies coming back together again. So you're not at that level. So, you know, but generally I would try to walk out of there with my head held high, so to speak, and leave a good impression. And, you know, a door open, you know, is a good door to have if there's somebody you feel you can chat to again. But I think first and foremost, you've got to accept their right to make their decision. I mean, if you go down to the road...
It's yourself you're defeated. But that's all right, me saying it or somebody else saying it, but when that person hits that stone wall, it's very difficult.
It's terribly frustrating.
And
we've all been there. We've all sat down going, saying, that was me. That should have been me, or certainly shouldn't have, more to the point, shouldn't have been them. I had a client, it was a very, very high profile job given out about 4 years ago, and down to the last three, and I was coaching one of them. I also knew who one of the other ones was, and I also knew who got the job.
Yeah.
And to say that the person who got the job was fifth of the top three, never mind first of the top three, would be too understated. It was a travesty. Actually, the organisation struggled afterwards very badly and very publicly.
Yeah.
It was a travesty. Knowing both the runner-up, the two runners-up very well, either of them would have been excellent.
Yeah.
I mean,
by
every reading of it, it was public, by every reading of it, there was no doubt that the wrong person got it. And, you know, that's frustrating.
It is. Now, on the situation on the present day, coming up to the present day, with all the qualifications that are coming out, there looks to be a greater chance of people being employed after a shorter period than there was, we'll say, 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I dip my toes reluctantly into that world because it's very frustrating for those who aren't employed, and that people will claim that figures are being massaged, etc., in terms of back-to-work schemes and stuff like that. But I do know from the employer side, they're not getting as many applications as they were getting.
Yeah.
And they're struggling to get sometimes the people they want to get. So it seems to have improved a bit.
It has.
A fair bit, probably. But jobs are still competitive. Do you know what I mean? Because the nature of the beast is you've got a job, but you want to get a better job. So now there's more people competing for that. Right. So it wasn't, and even we were a recession-formed business, but about 4 years ago or so, I did a survey of our clients. I took 200 clients and looked at them from a few different reasons, a few different kind of whatever factors. And 60% of them were employed, actually. So they were going for promotions or jobs elsewhere. And about 60% were male. And in around that, something like 55% were 34 years of age, basically. Yeah. So they can match that up lots of different ways. But jobs are still competitive. You know, there's still people want to get on, get a higher level job, get a bit of promotion, whatever. So all those things are competitive.
You're the employer and I'm the employee and I'm looking for a job. So you've asked me all the questions and I have felt that I've answered all the questions that you have asked me. Turn over to me and you say, Anthony, is there any question that you would like to ask me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have one question.
Okay,
but I'll let you go first.
Okay, I'm walking the plank here now.
Yeah.
I need to know more about the actual job, but just as a general viewpoint, I say to people, the question you ask must be built on knowledge. So don't kind of say, where's your business located? Right, or have you an office?
No.
And, right?
Yeah.
I would tend to build it on knowledge. Yeah. First of all, at this point in the interview, there should have been a lot of talk about the company.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? You should have been chatting about the company you're going for.
Correct.
But I would tend to ask a question based on knowledge along the lines of, I know you're expanding into the German market. What are the immediate plans or what platforms or blah, 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 blah. Okay. That's one thing I would recommend. Second thing I would talk about is addressing training needs maybe that you might have if you get the job, because we all need a bit of training.
Yeah.
It's no shame to say it. Yeah. And the third one, which people use, is to throw back in the employer and say, well, is there anything you felt we didn't discuss that would help me get the job? But certainly I would talk about knowledgeable. I would bring a knowledgeable question in. So I can think of some examples that are a bit long-winded, but, you know, something that's about the company. So, you know, I know you're involved in this. How's that going? Yeah. How's that progressing, etc.?
I suppose my one might be a little bit sharp. So,
there's no right or wrong in this game.
My one is there that if I was successful at getting this job, when would I be starting?
Okay,
is that too sharp? Or
well, I it's not. I mean, it's a very practical question that matters to you. However, I see an interview as 45 minutes for you to sell yourself.
Right.
Okay. So I don't think that question sells you.
Right.
I think the problem with that question is the answer is Monday fortnight or Monday 3 weeks.
Right. But does it show then that the person is here to actually...
Well, I think that's
where I'm coming from.
Yes, but I think at this stage in the interview they should have got that. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I would possibly, taking the spirit of that, say something like, just to reassure you, having spent this last hour here, I am very keen in this job.
Right.
I am...
Yeah.
Really keen. I see where you're going. But to me, you should end up going to knowledge. So you should end up saying, like, I like what you're doing with that thing we talked about there with the German market.
Yeah.
And next thing, we're chatting it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and getting the employer talking is a very worthwhile thing in an interview.
Yeah.
The famous one in Galway was, do you close the Galway races?
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly help you get the job. But
well, Liam, you know, it's fascinating. I suppose I could say to you, I could go on for another hour. It's true, your enthusiasm and your positivity is without fail at the end of the day. And the plug for myself and for Clemaris Community Radio here is that if Clemaris Community Radio can facilitate in any way, shape or form, if you would be interested in partaking with us, that we can make use of, because
absolutely,
we have to get ourselves out into the open at the end of the day.
Yeah,
we're not a closed shop as such.
I'm always glad to do anything that's going on here, and some of your colleagues have been very positive in lots of things around Clamorris and the area. And though I'm in Ballinrobe, we have an office in Clamorris, but I do tune in.
Yeah.
And I like the Facebook Live stuff you've been doing.
Yes.
And I also keep an ear on the sports show here on a Sunday evening.
That's right.
And other stuff as well.
Captain and Austin and...
I think it's important. The community radio sector is very important.
Yeah.
Be close to my heart, really.
Yes.
And best of luck. And thank you very much for having us here.
And thank you very much. I've enjoyed it immensely.
If you need office supplies, school books, or that special picture framed, you need Books Etc. of Claremorris. Pay us a visit and see for yourself the wide range of books, art supplies and greeting cards, books etc. The Square Clare Morris. Call us on 094 936 2730.
McGann's Plaster Mouldings, May Spit at Clare Morris. If you're looking for the best deals in cornices or centrepieces, then we are the people to see. Clients can choose from 55 centrepieces and 25 cornices, as well as beading, dado rails, corbels, niches and archways. And all are made at our workshop in Maysmith at Clare Morris. McGann's also cater for contract for public buildings and private homes. Why not call and see our full range of products or telephone Darren or Tom at 094 9388208 or 087 2503 184. Also on our website at www.mcganns.com. And remember, McGann is your man.
Would you like to put a little magic into the life of someone that you love? Clare Morris Community Radio is delighted to be collaborating with Fairy Queen Maeve so you can have a unique, personalised letter sent from one of her fairies to your loved one. Drawing of the fairy and the recipient's name in Oum Celtic writing is also included. Find out more by visiting Clare Morris Community Radio's website or Facebook Fairy Letter.
Set yourself up for the day.
Get in the mood for dancing on the Sunday Brunch Show, 10 a.m.
This and every Sunday here on Clare Morris Community Radio.
Catch up with the latest handy hints, what's hot on TV, and listen to a verse or two.
Why not join Dolores and find out what's on the menu?
Now, unfortunately, we have reached the end of the show today, and I thank you all for listening. I thank my guest, Liam Horn, and until the next time, Slán.
This old house is getting shaky. This old house.